Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Carmen Amaros, host of the New York Podcasting Cafe, a program featuring interviews with public figures, celebrities, writers, authors, artists, playwrights, counselors, lecturers, as well as independent artists and musicians, all here on the New York Podcasting Cafe. Hi, this is Carmen Amaros again. I am actually podcasting today from Culture Expresso. It's a tiny little enclave at 72 West 34th Street. Very small. People can barely tell that I'm here. And the place has a little chandelier. It's kind of cute, kind of quaint. People sit here and go on Facebook. You see everybody watching their Facebook pages or studying or doing something in addition to having their coffee. Nice place, by the way. A solid cortado and drip coffee anchor. The menu of the stylish enclave near Bryant Park serves Kyoto coffee in the warmer months. And this is a much better choice for coffee than several chain stores closer to the park. Anyway, I'm here and I'm people watching while I'm podcasting, and some people are actually watching me, and some of them look at me. They give me favorable looks, and then others think, what is this lady doing here with that microphone and that laptop, you know, and the headset? But it's a lot of fun. I'm enjoying the season. I'm enjoying being out podcasting at different places. And this is something that I'm sort of experimenting with, and I'm really, really enjoying it. I'm really liking it, and I think people like it too, because they feel that it gives the place a little bit of publicity, a little bit of panache, and the word that I hear is more people are coming to some of the establishments that I have been podcasting out of since I podcasted out of them, which is, wow, that's good news. My guest today is Linda Martinez-Louis, a PhD and a clinical expert on the narcissistic personality. She is the author of Freeing Yourself from the Narcissist in Your Life by Tarcher Penguin. Dr. Martinez-Louis is a licensed psychotherapist with many years of clinical experience working one-on-one with clients who are dealing with narcissists. Please join me in welcoming Linda Martinez-Louis to the New York Podcasting Cafe.
Hi, Linda. Welcome to the New York Podcasting Cafe. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to this very, very much, and thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. We both know that you're an expert in the narcissistic personality. What led you to become an expert in narcissism?
I've been fascinated by narcissists for quite some time. When Christopher Lash, the brilliant sociologist, wrote his book, The Culture of Narcissism, in 1978, I paid a lot of attention to it. And then in my clinical training and practice, I started noticing that there were a lot of clients that were telling me life stories of all the suffering they were going through in destructive relationships with narcissists. They were unable to lead their lives, and they became sometimes completely immobilized. So I was intrigued by the narcissist. I saw it all around me, and I've done extensive research on the narcissistic personality. It does intrigue me. Each narcissist is an individual, and at the same time, there's definite pattern of narcissistic traits.
How does one spot a narcissist? And where can they be found? Are they all around us? Or
yes, we're surrounded by narcissists. This is a narcissistic culture, and they are handsomely rewarded for their external behaviors. On the outside, they come across as very self-absorbed and have tremendous self-entitlement. They believe that they are perfect, always right, and never make mistakes. They can be exceedingly charming, magnetic, and self-confident, and grandiose. Now, this refers to both male and female narcissists. We still have more male narcissists. That's what the studies show. Than females, but female narcissists are coming up strong. They can be found in our families, in our spouses and ex-spouses, certainly in the workplace, in corporate work, in professions of all kinds, in government, everywhere we encounter them. And we can even have people that we consider friends that we later find out are narcissists.
Really? Oh, that's scary.
It's very frightening.
Like, what do you look for when trying to spot a narcissist? How does a narcissist develop?
They develop, as far as we know, there is no narcissistic gene. Mm. They develop and are conditioned as children. And even by the age of 3 or 4, you can see that this child is very narcissistic.
Mm.
They, if they're the golden child, the chosen one, then they are picked by the mother or father, who's often a narcissist.
Really?
And are seen as omnipotent, perfect, and they have to be mirroring the mother or the father instead of being a real self. So they seek praise, adulation, and adoration, and as a result, don't develop a conscience.
Oh, wow.
So it is the parent that conditions the child in this way, or the message that the child receives from the parent or the parenting figure that causes the narcissistic reaction. What happens is that the narcissist develops a false self rather than developing an authentic self that is beneath the surface. The true self is a spontaneous, authentic person who is an individual in every sense of the word. The false self is the self that the child learns to adapt to be to make the parent, in quotes, love them.
Wow.
So in the case of a narcissist, the child develops a false self.
They're living and developing and growing to please their parents so that their parent will be happy and approve of them always.
That's right. Now, all children that are trying to, we all have to survive as children, but all children that are trying to please their parents don't become narcissists. However, the child that is picked as the perfect one, the chosen one, the savior of the family very often, can become narcissistic and a narcissist because they don't develop a conscience. They're allowed to have full run of the household, allowed to abuse their siblings. They're permitted everything that they wish, and then they mirror the narcissistic parent.
Abuse can be translated as control, some kind of control over someone, not necessarily physical, not necessarily verbal. Does that entail stripping other people of their self, of their volition, of their independence?
Do you mean does a narcissist do that, or does that happen to the narcissist?
Does the narcissist also strip others in abusing them, not physically abusive or verbally abusive, but sometimes the control factor is the abusive process itself, isn't it? Where they control
Absolutely. The
people to do what they want.
They are highly controlling, and they are always abusive to other people.
Right. So the people that they're controlling don't necessarily realize that they are being abused by the narcissistic control over them.
They don't. Wow. They go along with the program because if they're getting, again, if the charm offensive is good enough, if the reasons for being with the narcissist are strong enough, especially with high-level narcissists that are very successful in the world, they put out the gold in front of them, and it's like an offering. They're giving this person a new life. And so this individual will marry them, will, in quotes, become their closest friend, will become the business partner, and all of that in order to live in that heady atmosphere, that heady lifestyle. However, so the public, what happens in public, too, with a narcissist, let's say a person's involved with them in a marriage or partnership, is very different from what happens behind closed doors. Behind closed doors, it gets very ugly. They have tremendous volcanic rage that is projected out to those who are with them in their lives, which is very frightening. They are chronic liars. They're very deceitful. They're very ruthless and lack mercy. And the distinguishing trait is a complete lack of empathy. They are unable to understand how another person is feeling or give a damn about that. They can show a pseudo-empathy, which can be very convincing, but it's not real, because once the lights go down and they're no longer, in quotes, in public on camera type thing, then you see that Mr. Hyde, where there was Dr. Jekyll, now there's Mr. Hyde. The darkness comes over and is projected out onto that person with whom they're involved.
we have different types of narcissists. We can see that there's, it starts in the home.
I think it is the origin. The origins are there in the home environment. And all the longitudinal studies that have been done over the years, 20 years, one of the greatest experts on narcissism, Dr. James Masterson, who died about 4 or 5 years ago, talks about how the home really is the crucible for the budding narcissist.
Mm-hmm.
That is really where it begins. Not all children, of course, are golden children, but there can be children who don't think well of themselves who then later become narcissistic. They're kind of delayed as a result of their conditioning. But it does start there. Now, in some instances, you have a different kind of narcissist who is a covert narcissist,
mm-hmm.
and they are the trickiest, most concealed, and difficult personality disorders to identify because they come in as having a lot of integrity, strong moral values, as being even very humble, and they have an at-your-service attitude towards you.
Mm, really?
They're among the toughest ones. In fact, they are the toughest ones to discern.
Is this type of a person, a narcissistic person, a dangerous person?
They're psychologically and emotionally very dangerous.
Really?
They also are financially dangerous. In divorces, for example, I see all the time where the marriage has been going wrong for a very long time, and it's usually the woman, but it can be the man as well, particularly if there's money involved and there's property involved and their assets. The narcissist will pre-plan the getaway, getting out of the marriage. He or she may already have a replacement for that spouse, but the spouse unwittingly drops down his or her guard, and in the meantime, the financial resources are whisked away to a business partner or to a sibling that the narcissist has. And then when the divorce takes place, the narcissist suddenly becomes, in quotes, poor. I've seen this happen so many times.
Really?
Yes.
I think
and it also happens, it also happens in families like with siblings. And when there is some kind of property involved or an estate or trust, the narcissist will get the ear and start to really work the parent so that all the assets and all the money and all everything will go to that sibling and the other siblings will get nothing.
Oh, is this real? Does this really happen?
Yes, it does. It does happen. And in my telephone consultations, I run across this quite often where this has occurred, both the spousal aspect. I tell women, I have mainly women calling me, but there are men as well, and they'll say, you know, I really want to divorce this man. I've been doing a lot of research on the narcissistic personality. I want to get out of this marriage. I will say to them, how much do you know about your assets? Do you have a plan? Do you know where the bank accounts are? Because if you want to do, you better make a plan, not share it. You certainly can't share anything with someone, with a narcissist whom you're going to divorce at all. Uh-huh. And another thing is they don't mediate. They really don't mediate. They may pretend to mediate. They may pretend to do therapy. But once they decide that they want out, they're going to take all the gold with them.
Oh, my.
Leaving the person absolutely devastated financially, emotionally, psychologically, and spiritually.
So in essence, you feel that there's no hope for the narcissist. Can the narcissist be made aware of who they are and what they are, and can they reform, can they change? You stated
it's,
that they
it's
were.
It's a very fixed disorder. I do know that Dr. Masterson and other psychoanalysts and psychiatrists have worked with him from time to time, and I understand there are minimal results, but this is very rare. It's a fixed personality structure and disorder, and their defense mechanisms are so powerful, they're like steel.
Mm-hmm.
The mechanisms that they use, and those are unconscious mechanisms in the unconscious of that person. Mm-hmm. They use a lot of projection where they eject their toxic contents onto the other person. And they're absolutely outrageous with this. It almost is like vomiting on someone else.
Oh my.
They will accuse another person of making a mistake when they're the ones that actually made the huge error. And they might even do it publicly and shame the person, shame the individual. So there are these primitive projections. They also are in massive denial about who they really are. Their identification is with that false, grandiose self. That's whom they believe they are. The other part is what's called repression. They, in quotes, forget. In the unconscious, there is this very damaged real self. And they're not familiar with that at all. Now that does come out in volcanic rage. The rage of the narcissist is deep and vituperative. And it's always bubbling beneath the surface. If you know someone who's a narcissist, you can kind of feel that if you let yourself. You can feel that. And then they erupt like Vesuvius. They erupt and they become absolutely outrageously. And it's not an anger. It's like an unending flow of toxic lava that goes on to you if you're the recipient. And if you're in close quarters, if you're in a marriage, or you have a business relationship, or you're a sibling, they also pick the right times. They know just when you're vulnerable. That's another aspect of them. Even though they don't have insight, they seem to know when we're at our lowest ebb, and then they work it. They know it's like a red-tailed hawk in the sky looking for prey, moving and spiraling down to their prey.
So nobody's safe because this person is up there seeing everything. They see everything, they feel. So as long as you're in their life, this is a constant with them. You know, they're
That's
up
right.
there. The aerial view of you is a constant thing. You're the prey. You're always the prey.
You are. You can learn to really work with yourself so that you do the in-depth study, reading, and understand these individuals much better than they know themselves. The other aspect of that is self-care, that once you recognize this, and even before you do, but if you're certainly involved with one of these individuals, and on one level or another, we are making contact with them every day.
Really?
Absolutely.
And who might these people be? Like,
they would be members of our family who are very controlling and who are narcissistic and we didn't recognize and decide, for example, that we're not going along with their program and they're controlling the other family members. And if we bring up anything that's the truth, they knock us down and speak, try to ruin our reputations or any kind of power we might have in the family, demeaning us, humiliating us, and some family members believe them. They're very convincing.
Right, because there is the abuse of controlling, of the narcissist controlling the other family members. They don't realize that they're being controlled, and that's in itself the abuse also. So
yes. That's right. And also in marriages with children, the narcissist will become the good parent, in quotes, especially if they can smell a divorce is coming.
Is that right?
And they will do everything they can to sabotage the relationship with the other parent. And sometimes that works. I've seen that happen where when the divorce is taking place, the other partner will capitulate just out of pure exhaustion, and the narcissist will take over the children. I've seen that happen in a custody battle, and that is so grim and horrible when that happens. Now, if we are aware enough, we can deal with narcissists. One of the best ways is to avoid them completely. If we don't have to be around them, we don't have to because we're not, you know, we're not married to one or we don't have to work with them, then we can pretty much avoid them. But that's not always possible in this world of ours where we're surrounded by narcissistic personalities at this time.
But there are those of us who seem to attract this type of personality for whatever reason. Sometimes a child may get out of a situation where perhaps they were living with a narcissistic parent, and they, you know, might have escaped it. They didn't become a narcissist themselves, probably, but yet they begin to gravitate to perhaps relationships with people that are narcissistic.
That's right.
Does that happen?
That happens often when a child will escape that from the family, but then they'll marry one or two narcissists and try to go maybe even for number three. Because, first of all, narcissists are very compelling human beings. They're often very successful in the world, and they have a magnetism that draws us to them. There's also a tendency in human nature to keep going back to the very things that hurt us the most. A cycle of repetition.
Is that like the Stockholm Syndrome?
It's very similar to that. That's right, to that dynamic. And we're all subject to the return to what wounded us and what hurt us so deeply. And so we go back to it over and over again. I see this pattern with my clients and also with those who make comments on my blog. And finally, they can break the cycle. Finally, they can go no contact. But the tendency to go back is very compelling and powerful.
So the people that you actually counsel are people who are in narcissistic relationships, not necessarily the narcissists themselves, or do you both? Do you work with both?
I don't work with narcissists because they're not amenable to talking or consulting. Because they think they're perfect. So the problem is with the other individuals. So I work with the victims of narcissists.
I see.
Those who are suffering, daughters and sons of narcissistic parents, in-laws who are trying to destroy marriages that are narcissistic, siblings of narcissists who are taking the entire estate, have lied about them all of their lives, have tried to destroy their reputations and destroy them, ex-spouses and spouses of narcissists. Those are the people with whom I consult.
We all know about what happens in the family. But, you know, we all need those that we love. We all need our families. And what does one do? What do you suggest to someone who's in a situation like that where they continue being whittled down by the narcissist or narcissist within a family or a relationship or a job or whatever situation they find themselves in?
After we recognize who this person is, the next step is really taking very good care of ourselves. And most people don't do that. Self-care, self-respect, and taking time each day, something that I've studied and learned more recently, to go into the parasympathetic calming part of the nervous system where there is recovery and healing.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes many forms. One of them would be to take a quiet time with ourselves. This can mean meditation in whatever form that works for you. Even if it's just a few minutes, listening to a guided meditation. I found that there's some on YouTube that are very, very good. There are yoga, hatha yoga has some wonderful poses with emphasis through breathing through the nose, which activates the parasympathetic nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
A real direct way of getting into that calming part of the nervous system, the parasympathetic, is through acupuncture. If it's done by a tremendously masterful acupuncturist, who again must be a very empathic person, that with those needles and with that experience, you can go into very, very deep relaxation and recovery.
Mm-hmm.
And each time we go into that state of calmness, we are restoring ourselves. We are cleansing ourselves of the fight or flight syndrome that occurs when we are constantly having to be with a narcissist. They activate fear in us. There's a feeling in our gut, in our heads, everywhere in our bodies, that this is dangerous to our well-being. Now, we need fight or flight in order to survive, but it's interesting, in the temple of our society, there are people that are thriving in the sympathetic nervous system. The focus, I believe, now especially, is to go each day at different times. It can be only for a few minutes into mm-hmm. the calming part of the nervous system, the parasympathetic.
Mm-hmm.
Exercise is very helpful. What we eat and when we eat it, keeping the blood sugar balanced and level, getting the sleep that we need. Sleep is sacred. Sleep mm-hmm. is in the parasympathetic recovery calming part of the nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to say no to people without mm-hmm. feeling guilty.
Right.
Being tactful, but being able to say no. We don't have to do everything that someone asks us to do.
Wow.
Now, if we're working for a narcissist, that's a real challenge.
Yes, it is. It certainly is. I've been there.
Yes, well, it sounds like you were able to do it, to really get through it.
I've had the most amazing bosses in my life in the corporate world. I've worked with some really great, fine people with ethics and who were spiritual and really cared about others. But I've had that one or two people that are just completely narcissistic. You know, they don't see anything beyond themselves or beyond their agenda or their project. So I've been there and back. It's called being in hell and back.
Exactly. And, you've been through the fires of hell and have mm-hmm. returned and survived and thrived.
Mm-hmm.
These people are, I say, impossible to work for, but there are ways of dealing with them. I think that it's usually not a long run with them.
No,
because they get to the point. That's right. They get to the point where they've sucked everything out of you that they can get in terms of your creativity, your intuition, your kindness, everything. And then they're always looking for a replacement. Let's bring a fresh person in.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They dispose. Everyone's mm-hmm. disposable to the narcissist. Everyone.
Yes, it's true. I worked for one guy, I won't mention his name, who it seemed that I think the one time that I might have had to run to the ladies room to freshen up was calling me. It was like he was calling every 15 minutes.
Oh.
I don't know how he got his job done, but nothing that anyone did was perfect. Everyone walked on eggs. People fed him his needs, his wants, hand and foot. There was no saying no to this man. And it was like you said, you know, that he was sympathetic to an extent, but it was all about, you know, he had to save himself from appearing like an ogre. But,
yeah, well, that's the image piece, which is the image that they create is mm-hmm. their reality.
Yeah, and his previous assistant that worked for him, when I first started working for him, she began to call me because she had been transferred to another office because she'd been hospitalized with a UTI that almost killed her. And she would call me and say, are you all right? Are you all right? You know, first she introduced herself, and then once I found out who she was, she would call me periodically to ask me how I was doing. And I kept saying, oh, I'm fine. You know, you want to keep your job. You don't want to talk bad about anyone. You just want to, you know, plug along and prove that you can really handle the stresses of the job and the workload. So you don't say anything. You don't want to confide, you know, what's going on to anyone. And that was me. I wouldn't talk to anyone. I wouldn't say anything. I would just go right along. And I was there for about a year and a half. And toward the end of my last few months, I stopped, you know, my menses stopped. The stress was so intolerable to my body that I stopped. And I know this is a rather personal thing to say publicly, but I know that this might be of some support to people out there who want to prove themselves. They want to keep that job. You know, the times are bad. People need their jobs. People have bills to pay. But they continue in that position, and their body is fraying, and they're unraveling, and the bodily functions begin to deplete. They start going down. And my hair started falling off. My nails got brittle. My skin was dry. It was just horrible. It was a very, very bad situation to be in. Say, for an executive under this man who called me into his office one day and said, look, I'm worried about you. I know how this man is. I don't want anything to happen to you. I really like and respect you. And I'm going to take you out of here and I'm going to put you in a rotation because I'm worried about your health. And I couldn't believe it. I guess somebody saw it. And this is one of the few people. This man was like an angel. He actually saved me from myself, first of all.
Wonderful.
From the narcissist and from myself, because I wanted to prove how strong I was, in which people who do know me know that I have a strong character and that I am strong, but I'm still a woman, and I still am frail physically in some ways. And, well, you know, it's a long story. We'll continue that at another time.
Yes,
really,
well, that is
you.
What happens. And just a quick business on that, incredible that man did bring you in and was very empathic and very concerned about you. So there still are incredible human beings with whom we were, our friends, people. That's another thing, is support from real friends can be tremendous in dealing with these situations. The other
real
piece
friends.
Of the
you said the word real friends. Sorry,
real
you said the
friends,
word, real friends. Mm-hmm.
Which are very rare, but we can find them. They are out there, even amidst all this madness. They are there. The other piece with a narcissist is that the narcissist does not have a developed conscience. They don't develop a conscience. A primitive conscience usually develops at the age of about 3. Then by 8 or 9, a more developed conscience occurs, and the child is not a narcissist. And then throughout life, we develop a more complex conscience. But with them, since they don't have a conscience, they don't care what they're doing to you. They're using the other person up and getting a replacement. They don't care. Once they've sucked, as Otto Kernberg said, they suck the juice and pulp out of the other person and dispose of it. That's what they do. And I know I get vehement on the subject because they cause so much harm. So much.
Wow.
So I congratulate you on getting through that, understanding it, having this man really be intuitive and care deeply, and now you have completely, you know, you're recovered from this and understand it.
On many levels, too. You know, I've learned how to identify a controlling person and love them and all of that, but know that I cannot be within that person's boundaries. I have to maintain my own space, my own health, and my own well-being. There's a person that we are all meant to be. We're all to have our own personalities, our own imperfections too, you know.
Absolutely.
But we're not meant to be controlled. We're not meant to be modeled after something or someone else to suit someone else's fancy or agenda or whatever it is that they want out of those around them.
That's right. We spend our lives evolving and going through the process of separation and individuation from our family of origin. And those who are not evolving are regressing. So the narcissist is always in a state of regression. Even though they may have all the power and all the assets in the world, and deep inside, they're empty, it's bleak, they're restless, they're enraged, and there is self-loathing. There is a paranoid aspects of fear of real and imagined enemies and a pernicious envy of those who are authentic and are capable of real love.
Linda, we can go on and on and on, and I want to have you come back again for a part 2 on this because this is a very important topic. This is
very real.
And I'm so thankful for people like you who made it a point to make it their specialty and become learned and teachers and people who make others aware of this condition. You wrote a book, Freeing Yourself from the Narcissist in Your Life, which is available on Amazon, which is where I saw it. Can you give us a hint on how this book can help a person make change without feeling guilty of abandoning a narcissist or the narcissist?
The book goes in detail with lots of examples, which I think really help the reader to understand the dynamics that go on. It gives a very clear and detailed portrait of the narcissist and what their needs for the world's applause and all that. It identifies them very clearly. And then one of the things that I do in the book is use a very well-known narcissist who are no longer alive, because you don't want to get sued by a living narcissist, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
And they love to sue, by the way, as we know.
Mm-hmm.
But so I use several famous people. Pablo Picasso is one of them, you know, one of the greatest painters and ceramicists and artists ever known. But I do a psychobiography of him, explaining how he destroyed all the other people in his life, except Francois Giraud, with whom he had two children. She did escape from him. Then there is Frank Lloyd Wright, was a supreme narcissist. The architect.
The architect, wow.
The world-famous architect. Very talented.
Narcissist?
Extreme narcissist. Very talented. You know, worldwide known. Will always be. He was his mother's little darling. He was a super golden child. And she always knew he was going to be a great builder, and he was tied to her, and he really hated her, but could not get away from her psychologically. He left, abandoned a wife with six children, went off and went in Europe. That's just one of the things he did with one of the wives of one of his clients.
Mm-hmm.
He was also a complete disgrace with other human beings. Ayn Rand, who is quite, can be controversial, but she was definitely a high-level narcissist, brilliant woman, absolutely brilliant. But again, even she said that herself, that she was used. She was loved, in quotes, for her gifts and for her brilliance and for what she knew and for the way that she could articulate her ideas. And then I also have Armin Hammer, who was an industrialist, and he was a super-duper narcissist in the world, highly ruthless, could get anything he wanted and did. So I use the psychobiographies, which I thought was a good way of kind of dramatically showing these people, like on a stage.
Mm-hmm.
Then I talk about the internal world of the narcissist with their narcissistic rage, how they live without empathy. So I really go through that, and then towards the end, I start talking about what you can do with yourself to really start to heal, the rules of engagement, how to hold your own with a narcissist, how you can practice restraint and maintain your moral and ethical values as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then I will be having another book come out that's going to talk about recovery, restoration, and rediscovery of the true self.
Wonderful. That sounds fabulous. And I really look forward to having you for the second part of this interview, which I know is going to be even better because you've got some really great examples of, scenarios of dealing with the narcissistic personality.
Well, thank you. I've enjoyed this so much. Been lovely.
Me too. It's been absolutely delightful and educating for me, because all of the examples that you used from the beginning of the interview until now were not known to me. You're not aware until somebody makes you aware of things, and I'm so thankful for that. And I'm sure there are folks out there who are probably experiencing some of the scenarios that you touched up on. Where can people find you on the web for questions, counseling, or
they can find me at thenarcissistinyourlife.com, which is my website.
Mm-hmm.
That has tremendous amount, particularly blogs on there, blog posts, 1,200 mm-hmm. of them that I've done throughout the years on every facet of the narcissistic personality.
Mm-hmm.
They can find me on the Amazon page, the writer's page of the Amazon site, and that's where they can get my book. That's the easiest way to get it, is through Amazon. It's in ebook and also in paperback.
Mm-hmm.
It was
okay.
Published by Tartar Penguin some time ago. I also have a Facebook page.
Great.
A wonderful Facebook page. people with whom I communicate, the narcissist in your life, Facebook. I do Twitter from time to time. I'm going to start to do it more. Mm-hmm. And but those are the main sources of getting in touch with me. They can subscribe to my blog on by going to the website, thenarcissistinyourlife.com. Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. Linda, I hope you'll come back and join us soon, will you?
I certainly will. It was a marvelous experience.
Thank you. It was marvelous having you on my program. Been great having you here on the New York Podcasting Cafe. And I hope you'll come back to do another segment on this topic, since it's clearly a condition that few people talk about, and it brings insight to victims out there who need to heal either from narcissism or possibly run from a narcissistic person. Thank you so much for joining me on the New York Podcasting Cafe.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Bye.
You have been listening to an interview with Linda Martinez-Louis, expert on the narcissistic personality. This is part one of Signs of a Narcissist. Thank you for joining us here on the New York Podcasting Cafe. To reach Linda, go to www.thenarcissistinyourlife.com book, and you can reach her there. You can also find her on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest, and Instagram. Carmen here on the New York Podcasting Cafe. Have a great week.
Thank you.